Blog Talk Radio.
Gathered here to join each other hand in hand. No more playing house, no. 'Cause I wanna make it real. Do you understand? To have and to hold until death do us part. No one, no one. The beat of our heart. This is gonna last. And interrupt this ceremony. Oh, baby, yeah. All you gotta do is say,
love me.
Say that you love me, and we will walk.
Witness that Muhammad is. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
All praise is due to Allah. Okay, we're going to get started in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger, and we further bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, and guide in our midst, And it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to greet you with our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, ma'am.
Thank you, dear sisters, and I am so honored tonight. I am so thrilled about doing this show. I have two beautiful queens from the sisterhood with me, and I'm going to allow them to come down front and center and introduce themselves. And, of course, we're going to start with you, Sister Nisa Islam. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, man. First of all, thank you so much for having me on your show tonight. Assalamu alaikum to your listening audience. I'm the executive director of the Wedded Bliss Foundation, and we're a community-based organization in Washington, D.C., helping teens and adults create healthy relationships and healthy marriages to better the outcomes for children. And we do this in three ways. We do this with by having education classes for singles and couples. We also do something called Black Marriage Day, which is an annual event where we celebrate marriage in the Black community. And we also do professional trainings for people around the country to learn how to duplicate our work in their own city.
Oh, praise is due to Allah. What a wonderful work you're doing, Sister Nisa. And we thank you for your service to our people and to our nation. So thank you, Sister. And, of course, we have with us someone who is definitely not a stranger to any of us. Well, I'm going to allow her to introduce herself, Sister Cecilia Muhammad from Atlanta, Georgia. Assalamu alaikum, Queen.
Wa alaikum salam, family. It is my honor and my privilege to be with you tonight. Sister Cecilia, who is married to Brother Marcus, we are co-facilitators of the BlackMarriageRetreat.org, where we do marriage seminars and workshops to help strengthen marriage and families. We do marital counseling. And we also have our own organization called Youth and Adult Intervention Services, where we do a lot of the same similar work that our sister just mentioned as well. So I'm not going to go into repeating all of that, too. But just to say that we're just working, you know, to help our leader, teaching God, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, to put his words into action in our community. And the number one thing is to help strengthen our families for the future.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, all praise is due to Allah. And, of course, Sister Cecilia, to you and Brother Marcus, you know, we can never thank Allah enough for the two of you for all of the work that you're doing with the marriage retreat and the singles retreat and what you're doing to strengthen relationships across the nation, inside and outside of the Nation of Islam. So thank you and our dear Brother Marcus for all of your work and your contribution to our nation. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. And, of course, our topic is Before You Say I Do. And I'm going to tell you a little history about this topic. You know, it's sad, but oftentimes very true, that a lot of our new marriages are suffering. And in my personal opinion of being a marriage counselor for 26 years, I just think this is poor planning on our part. We get married for different reasons and not always the right reasons. And so I think the best way to combat some of this is to plan our weddings, our lives for the future, and that's something that we don't do. So I want to start off first with self-preparation, and I'm coming from an angle of really getting to know yourself, because sometimes we don't know what we want. And if we don't know what we want, certainly anyone that we're marrying is not clear about what we want. And so I want to ask you, I'm going to start with you, Sister Nisa. In your opinion, what can an individual do to prepare themselves for marriage?
You know, that's an excellent question. And I think one of the things that I tell singles when I'm doing groups is that, first of all, they have to really know themselves. and really know what they like, what they don't like, and most of all, what are you bringing to the table besides an appetite? You know, a lot of times people are looking at, well, what is this person going to do for me? But I want singles to know, what are you bringing to the table? Who are you? You know, are you the kind, for a female, are you the kind of woman that you would want your son to marry? You know, what kind of woman are you? You know, for a man, are you the kind of man you would want your daughter to be involved with? And unfortunately, for a lot of us, the answer is no. You know, we wouldn't want our children to be involved with a person like us. And so that gives people a foundation upon which to move from. But definitely, what are you bringing to the table? I do an exercise with singles, say, name, tell me three things about yourself and why you are the best catch. You know, why are you fabulous for somebody to be involved with? And it's sad because a lot of times people cannot answer that question. They don't know three things about themselves that make them a great catch. So if you don't really know yourself that well, how is anybody else going to know who you are, what you are, and how they could possibly please you as a potential spouse if you really don't know these kind of things about yourself? So I start off by telling people that they have to know themselves. That's the very first thing that a single person has to take the time to do. Get to know you. What makes you happy? Because happiness is a choice. Happiness is not about somebody else doing something to please you. Happiness is a choice because we know attitude determines altitude. So the better your attitude is about a situation, the higher you are going to be. Because the people we get involved with, they are going to disappoint us. I tell people that going in, you are going to be disappointed. So understand what makes you happy and choose to be happy. Regardless of what the circumstances, we know stuff is going to happen. But if you choose to be happy and find a way to deal with it and just settle on the best part of the situation as opposed to the poor part, you know, we can have something to work with.
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. And also, I'm going to pose this question to Sister Cecilia. You know, oftentimes we don't really consider situations. A lot of times we become infatuated with a person, or we say we fall in love with the person, but we don't really know that total package. Like, for instance, you know, marrying a man who has been married before and maybe he has 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 children and we just so in love with him and we're going to take this package deal on because we want this man. But how often do we really prepare for that type of relationship, Sister Cecilia?
Well, that's the real issue because we don't really prepare ourselves. We fake ourselves out and tell ourselves, yes, I can deal with this. I can deal with this. Okay, well, sister, look at the reality. You've been single. You don't have any children of your own. But you're sitting here telling yourself you're about to go into a relationship with a man that has 7 children. So how much of a reality is that for that person? We're just looking at, man, I'm about to get me a husband. I'm about to get me this good man. And all of that, but we're not really looking at how much this is going to impact your everyday life, how it's going to increase the amount of responsibilities that you now have. And we tell sisters all the time, and this is one of our mantras that we were saying even with the marriage retreat we just got off of, sister, you have to sit down and really analyze what makes you happy, what makes you upset, what you do not refuse to deal with. And we have to be honest with ourselves and not capitulate because, man, this man is in my life. One may not come back around again. We have to be honest with ourselves because most of the time when we counsel people, most of the time we hear, I saw this in the courtship and I thought I could change him or I could change her. And I tell people all the time that is when you put that in your mind that you are going into a relationship and you're going to change someone, you started off wrong in the first place. So we have to be really honest with ourselves. You have to be that raw, naked honesty with yourself. Write it down if you have to remind yourself, so when you get into that lovey-dovey mode, you pick up that, and I always tell sisters, get a courtship notebook. Write down who you are, what you want, what do you expect from this man. And then as you go through the courtship, see how things are changing, even in the courtship process. Till this day, I tell sisters, I have the notebook of questions that I asked my husband over 21 years ago, you know. So we have to be raw and honest with ourselves, so that when you walk into this relationship and investigate, that's the other thing, we don't thoroughly investigate. Don't take her word for it. Don't take his word for it. Go investigate. Go sit down and meet with those relatives and them family members that they tell you they don't want nothing to do with, because they just we just don't get along. That means those are the people you need to go and sit down and talk with.
Exactly. Yes, ma'am. And also, you know, thinking about what you said, Cecilia, you know, when we talk about courtship, oftentimes we are confused with the purpose of courtship. Courtship is not a process in which you emotionally involve yourself. Of course, getting to know someone, there is somewhat of an attachment, but it's a commitment to a process, but not a commitment to an individual. You've committed to the process of getting to know someone, but you have not yet made a commitment, and yet they use that time to get to know one another, to impress or woo one another, but there's no observation and examination. And oftentimes they get married, and then a week later they was like, wow, I didn't know this.
Exactly.
So, you know, we need to really stress the importance of courtship and what it is. And so I'm going to ask you, Sister Nisa, how important is that process?
I think you said it right there. The courtship process is the most important process. And I'm glad you said that it's a commitment to the process and not to the person, because too many times people get in courtship and they start doing things as if they're married. And I'm talking to couples, I'm like, wait a minute, why are you doing that? Well, we're going to get married. I'm like, you have no guarantee that this person is going to marry you, or even that you are going to marry them. And so the courtship is a significant opportunity to find out what you need to know, to see if, in fact, this person is qualified to be the best spouse for you. You take them to court. You ask them questions. You cross-examine them. You make them mad. You meet the relatives, as Sister Cecilia said, that they don't want to be bothered with. You talk to the ex to see, well, what happened? Why did you all get a divorce? What happened? Because everybody puts their best foot forward. You know, all praise is due to Allah. We want ourselves to look good. And so that's what we're going to get. But it's not until we dig and, you know, uncover some things that we really find out the truth about one another. And because we know how we are. You know, we put on stuff. As sisters, we know we wear certain undergarments. And we wear the certain undergarments to give us a certain look. And the same thing with everybody else. People do things to give themselves a certain look. And but then when the look is gone, there's the real you. And you're like, wait a minute, whoa. This is not who I'm married. Who is this? You know, where's the other person? You know, I've heard the minister tell this joke about a man who went to a bar, and he met a woman at a bar, and, you know, he fell in love with her. She was very attracted to her, so he invited the woman back to his apartment, and when he got back to the apartment, she took off her wig and put it in the drawer. You know, she had some false boobs, she took those off and put them in the drawer. She had some hips on. She took those off and put it in the drawer. And the man said, dang, I don't know whether I should get in the bed with you or get in the drawer with all the stuff I'm going to attract to you. And so, of course, the way the minister tells it, it is so funny. It is so funny.
Yes,
but that's how it is. You know, people put on a good front. You have to really work with the person and ask the right questions to get to the real them.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
So the
Evan, you know, I don't know.
Is very
Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. You know, I don't know how many people agree with me or disagree with me, but I tell you what has worked in my private practice. I tell people all the time, you know, instead of jumping into a relationship with someone, because the physical attraction is there, but we know the physical attraction is only temporary because everyone's physicality is going to change. However, you know, I always say start out being a friend, because who in the world wants to marry a stranger? I don't want to marry a stranger. I want you to be my very, very best friend. And at the end of the day, if it doesn't work out, at least you can say, you know what, it didn't work out as a courtship, but I got a friend, I got a brother. But we jump off into these courtships and relationships like there is no tomorrow, and oftentimes it is the road to failure. And so I'm going to ask about both of you, sisters, about past experiences and kind of cleaning our closets out, because we have so many people that have gotten married on the rebound from somebody else. We got people who got married because their biological clocks are ticking. We got people who got married for money. And, you know, a lot of times we judge people on their past experiences, and we carry that over into the marriage. And what I mean by that is that if you meet a brother or sister and they say, I was once addicted to drugs, and then every time you get angry, you bring that up. And so there's judgment and condemnation going on. And so you need to also make up your mind on what you can accept in a person's past, or whether you can be fair and non-judgmental about a person's past, because that is a lot. That happens a lot in our relationships, and it's very, very damaging. So, Sister Nisa, talk to us about that.
That's a very important. I'm very cautious about sisters revealing all of their past, because some stuff has no relevance to where you are today. We know that when we come to Islam, come as new women. All that happened before, we were with, and all of that is over and done. Allah gives us a clean slate.
Yes,
ma'am. And so that's where I tell sisters to start, with the clean slate. Because a lot of times, men cannot handle all of the things that we go through before we get to Islam. And no woman wants to hear, well, you were with so-and-so and you did so-and-so. Nobody wants to hear that.
Right.
And so as Allah is merciful enough to give us a clean slate when we come to Islam, that's where I tell sisters to start.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Because the brother you were with when you were in college and whatever you did in that dorm room has no relevance to the woman you are today. None whatsoever. Unless you have children by this man, if you don't, none of that stuff has any relevance. You know, who you were with and what you did and how you did it, and the mistakes that we made, because these are all mistakes. These are all things that we did prior to the knowledge of Islam.
Yes, ma'am.
These are stuff we did when we were dead in the world, when we lived in this dead world, when we were existing in that kind of world. So that stuff has to have no relevance into who we are today. So I tell sisters, if sisters that are Muslim, leave all that stuff behind. You know what? I'm a new woman. I may have five children, but I'm coming to you as a new woman.
Oh, praise God.
And the thing is, we have to live as a new woman, because a lot of times we are not careful enough with the responsibility of someone's life and their life struggles to be as Allah, to have the mercy that Allah has with us. So we use what people tell us as weapons against them, weapons of mass distraction.
Just make them.
And those weapons become very, very hurtful and very, very painful.
And you know what they say, once you put a word out there, you can't get it back.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I mean, and this is the information that I give to couples that I talk to, especially sisters, because we tend to be kinder in terms of hearing about a man's background, but men are not so kind. You come to Islam, you come as a new woman. I'm a virgin. I haven't been with anybody. Allah has blessed me to have a clean slate, and I'm a new woman. And that is the mercy that Allah has given to us. If Allah is going to be that merciful with us, who are we to say, well, forget all of that. Let me just tell you the real deal about who I am and what I've been. And I've been with that brother and that brother and that brother and that, you know. No, ma'am. Allah blesses us to start over.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Cecilia?
Yes, ma'am.
What about those so-called skeletons in the closet?
Well, it depends. Like, for me, for instance, me and my husband, we've known each other. I was 14. He was 15. So he knows a lot of my skeletons. But like I said, it's really like Sister Nisa Islam said, we have to have maturity to leave the past in the past, unless your past is affecting your future in the sense that the father, the mother of your children are in your future, where you have children with another man or another woman. So to some extent, your past is there because things come up in that kind of relationship where the past is going to affect you. But even in those situations, I always say it's a certain level of maturity that we have to have in handling our business. We can't revert back to our Negro side. We have to revert back to the God side of ourselves and handle our business accordingly. And that's the thing that we repeat, is that we have to have God-centered relationships, and that's where we can be strong. That's where we can weather the storms much better than thinking and functioning on that Negro mentality, because the Negro mentality is drama, it's chaos, it's out of order. So to help us to bring ourselves back into order, we have to reflect on our God mind, our God self, so that we can have more successful relationships. And that includes what she just said. That's your past. You repent for what you need to repent for. Go get audited, that the minister recommended. We have to get audited. And so in getting audited, we're releasing the negative engrams that's in us that are affecting our relationships. All the men that you did date, all the women that you did date, they are affecting your relationship to some extent, because you may be living in one of their valences. So if we do what the minister asked us to do and go and get audited, we can definitely finally leave the past where it needs to stay in the past.
Yes, ma'am. All praises to Allah. Okay, so let's talk a moment about spirituality, because this happens more times than we probably care to even speak about. But when there's a spiritual imbalance, maybe within self or within the couple, you might have one who is well-studied, well-versed in the teachings. You might have someone who is new to the teachings, and, of course, you get your faith and your understanding in degrees. And oftentimes we lose patience with one another, or we expect to have a full-fledged FOI or a full-fledged MTP when we are all striving, but we strive in different degrees because of our growth and development in Islam. So how do we exercise, or how do we implement patience into our relationships when we are not on the same level of our knowledge or our spirituality? I'm going to ask you first, Sister Cecilia.
Well, I think, first of all, to be able to deal with your spouse at different levels, first of all, we got to take the ego out.
Because when we have the ego in there and we're at the point where we use our knowledge to beat down our spouses and we don't use it to build them up, and I think that's the danger for a lot of relationships, is that when one feels they know more than the other, then I'm going to use Islam to beat you down with. I'm not helping to uplift you with it, but I just want to tell you where you ain't right here. You didn't do this right. You know, according to the teachings, you ain't do that right. But now when that same person who was weak, their only defense now for them is to become strong themselves and start to study and inform themselves and give them the knowledge and wisdom that they need to grow themselves. Then now you got two people in the house battling each other. And it's like, okay, when do we come to, let's stop battling. Let's deal with actual facts of the situation. Let's not deal with the emotion of the situation. Let's look at the exact problem. What is the issue? The brother's saying he doesn't like when you do this. The sister's saying she doesn't like when you do this. We have the teachings to help us to act accordingly, to be civilized, to make Islam a way of life, which is peace. So we're striving to have peace in our home, then we have to carry ourselves in that manner all the time, from the way we talk to each other to the way we treat each other. But if we can spurt the teachings and we can study the teachings all day long, we can recite the Quran from cover to cover, we can recite the Supreme Wisdom from cover to cover, but when you look at our behavior, when you look at our actions, are we handling each other according to those teachings, or are we good at just preaching the word but not putting it into action? And that's where the problem is that we are not putting it into action. And so most of our marital challenges, most of our marital problems, why we don't do things like we're supposed to, is because we're not putting it into action. And I tell brothers and sisters all the time, I said all of the tapes and the videos that the minister has did on male-female relationships, he has touched every subject in a male-female relationship. So I said, why do we have divorce in our nation? It's because we're choosing to either follow what he says, or we just say, no, I'm not even following what he says. I'm going to do it according to how I want to do it. And that's where we're not finding success. Because, again, when you have a divine man in our presence, he's showing us the way. He's giving us the map. And so if he's giving you the map to success, then when we're not successful, we have to say to ourselves, where have I deviated from? Which part of it do I need to mature and grow in? And that, again, is causing us to be honest with ourselves. So, again, the teachings, we have to not only just say the teaching, but we have to be the ones that apply what the teachings say to do.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Nisa?
Now, one of the things that I tell couples is that, you know, we're on the same team. I think that is what has to be paramount and really at the front of what everyone does. Because if you're looking at this other person and saying, you're not this, you're not that, or you don't know this, or you don't know that, then you're looking at them as an opponent as opposed to somebody on the same team. Because if we're on the same team and we got to know something, we're going to all learn it together. And if I don't know, then I'm going to make sure you know. I'm going to help you learn. Because we're all on the same team. We're in the Super Bowl of life trying to win the goal, win the goal. We're trying to score. So when you're on the same team and you think you're on the same team, then you can work together. I tell couples, you know, the husband is the captain and the wife is the star player. You know, so where is the star player going without the captain? Nowhere. And where is the captain or the coach of the team going without the star player? Nowhere. And this really makes is a good analogy for men because they're into sports and they can really see this. And so everybody has to see their part in the success of this marriage. Everybody has to see their part in the success of this family. And the thing is, we're all trying to achieve the same thing. We're all trying to be good Muslims. We're all trying to live a life that is pleasing to Allah. Now, somebody may know better than somebody else, but if we're all on the same team and we're all working together, then we're all going to grow together. Because I want you to know what I know, and I want you to know what I know, because we are one, we're one family, one marriage, and we're striving to be successful.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, I also want to say, you know, I know from experience that we have brothers and not so much sisters, but brothers, and that's just based on my personal experience. I don't want nobody calling me, but, you know, we have some sisters who practice or try to practice submission, and in that submission, they yield to their spouse's understanding of the teachings or the manipulation of the teachings in order to try and mold her and shape her into the woman that they desire her to be. But I tell you, an unstudied spouse is a dangerous spouse, because you all are not in competition with one another. You're actually teammates, as you said, Sister Nisa. And so if you have a teammate that you are in opposition with, then the team eventually loses and no one wins. And so when we talk about how we, you know, want to encourage, inspire, study together, teach whatever you're going to do, we need to do that and share these teachings in love. These teachings were brought to us in love, and I think a lot of people get away from that. Allah is love, and that is what we have the duty to show one another, whether it's in brotherhood or sisterhood or whether it's in marriage. That's what we are obligated to do as believers. And so a lot of times we get led astray because someone wants to yield to their own understanding. And I just want to encourage, excuse me, sisters who may be new in the teachings or, you know, are having problems understanding the teachings, and you want to be submissive to your husband, I tell you, like, you know, it's been said for years and years and years, if woman is the head of man, in order for him to be head of you, he has to allow Christ to be his head. So anytime he's deviating from that, you need to check who you're married to. Because I have seen so many sisters, and particularly that get misled with the teachings or get some kind of high polluted understanding that has nothing to do with Islam and certainly nothing to do with marriage. So I just want to encourage our sisters to always, always be found studying. That is essential at this point in our lives. It's critical that we do so. And I'm going to move on to, and I think, Sister Cecilia, you mentioned it, and I want to hear from both of you about Dianetics, because a lot of times people kind of put their issues on the back burner and don't realize that they're wearing them on their sleeve, and that they're reacting to their past experiences all the time, unbeknownst to them. It's become second nature. And so how important is it to get Dianetics? And I'm not talking about just before you get married, because when you talk about getting married, you have to realize that as a man and as a woman, at some point you're going to get married. You don't have to wait until you have someone in your life to start the preparation for marriage. You can just want to try to clean yourself up or get rid of some of your engrams. So how important is that, Sister Nisa?
First of all, I want to thank the minister for loving us enough to want to try to find a way to help us be better. I mean, it really takes a lot of love for somebody to look at a people and say, we need something, and let me find something to help my people be better. So let me thank him for that, because that does take a lot of love. And we're so very blessed, and I thank Allah for the minister having that kind of love for us. And so the thing is, we know from the teachings of the Unrealized Muhammad that we are a destroyed people. And so Dianetics is a tool that the minister gave us to help us to repair ourselves. And all of us need repair in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And Dianetics is an excellent tool to help us to repair ourselves. Because like you said, we don't know the engrams that we're carrying around until there's a trigger, until something happens, and then it comes up. But it is an excellent tool that the minister has given to us to help us to repair ourselves.
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Cecilia?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, the same thing that she just said, that we have to thank the minister over and over again for bringing us that tool and loving us enough to give us that tool, because as I personally examine myself and as I deal with other sisters and brothers, we are in a state of emergency. And we are in a state of emergency because we are affected by our past more than we ever thought. And it really didn't occur to me until because I am a certified auditor by Allah's grace. And just to study the book and the materials and to just see things walking off the pages from my own life experiences and how they have affected me to this present day, you know. So for us to be honest with ourselves, and for a lot of us who may not be taking advantage of the tool, we have to merge the tool with our Islam like we need to drink water, like we need to breathe air, because this is what's hindering us. This is what's killing us slowly but surely, all of the things that we are affected by. And I remember I was listening to a tape the minister did in the 80s, and he was saying because of all the muck and the mire and the bad experiences in our past, he was saying in the 80s that in order for this to be lifted up off of us, we will never truly see the God of self until we get rid of all the mud that's on top of the God within. So to me, when I heard that, I was just like, well, we're being hindered where we could be doing so much more, so much faster, but because of our past stuff, it's sitting there making us go slower. But if we get the process and apply the process, we can see a whole nother person, the true self of ourselves, because we've never seen that person because we're in so many people's valences. You could be talking to somebody and they think they're talking to Sister Cecilia, but they could be talking to my brother or my sister or my mother or my father, you know. So we are so compounded with so much in our lives that black people have dealt with in the hells of North America. And so he gave us something that is a tool that we have to begin to use. I have been counseling, sister, with brothers and sisters, and as I'm sitting there, I'm just hearing what are engrams that they're living with their spouse. They're living out negative engrams as they're talking. We as sisters don't know how our fathers not being in our lives, how it affects how we deal with our husbands. Brothers who have issues with their mothers or with females, how it affects today in their life at this very minute how they deal with their wives. And as you deal with the counseling and you hear it, we have recommended to people you need emergency counseling because it is so prevalent in the relationship. If they don't get the auditing done, their relationship will be destroyed because the valence that they're living in is not a temporary valence where it switches off. It's a permanent valence that they're in, and it's ruining their relationships. So that's why we are always promoting getting audited. It is mandatory. I tell sisters all the time, I said, if you're going in a courtship,
ask your courtship mate to start getting audited as you are in your courtship process, because trust me, there are issues within his life that he doesn't know that's even affecting him. There's issues in her life that she doesn't even know that's affecting her. And it's, and like I said, it's to me, it's after our Islam, with our submission to Allah, auditing is right up there because of the necessity that it's just a must.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. And I'm going to check with, of course, our vice president and our engineer tonight. Brother Kareem, are there any questions at this time before we move on?
No, ma'am, not at this point. No one has their hands up. Looking as if everyone is simply absorbing the wisdom.
Okay, well, I'd like to remind the listening audience, Sister Nisa is only going to be with us for a limited time, so if you have questions for her, please press 1 on your dial pad, and we'll get your questions before she leaves us. And for those of you in the chat room, I'm sorry, no Google or Yahoo chat tonight, but Blog Talk Chat, Brother Kareem will let us know if you have a question. Okay, we're going to go to part two of my talking point of family planning. And oftentimes what happens, you know, a lot of couples get married and they start to have a family right away. And my advice is always, you know, let's, you know, take a couple of years at least to be a couple for a little while and still, you know, really take the time to get to know one another. Because once you bring children into the equation, the last thing you want to think about is the possibility of divorce and that impact that it has on the child. So what is your advice, Sister Nisa?
That's an excellent question. You know, I tell couples a baby changes things. It's as simple as that. A baby changes things. It is wonderful for them to have the time together where they don't have to worry about the responsibilities of a baby or really anything else. I mean, it's an excellent way to start your relationship and your marriage because you get a chance to focus on your marriage, and that is so important. Marriage is like this third entity going on. There's the husband, there's the wife, and there's this thing called the marriage. And so when at all possible, delay having children until you are settled down, you're comfortable with each other as a couple, and then you can move forward.
Yes, ma'am. And your advice, Sister Cecilia?
Well, I'm one of the ones who, the minute I got married, I had children.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, we were married July 4th. I was pregnant August the next month. So, you know, I had what they call that honeymoon baby. But I tell couples, because of my experience, you know, that it is very, very wonderful to be able to plan your children, to be able to, you know, set forth a future plan for your family, because it can be hard, very hard, when you have not planned to have children and they come. It changed the dynamics of things, you know. But at the same time, whatever Allah's will is, the children will come forth whether we plan it or plan it not. Whatever His will is, it's going to happen regardless. But definitely if you can, to plan it, because I know for us, our first four, they just came, but the last two, by Allah's grace, we did plan those two, and we can definitely see the difference with those two according to the rest of our children, because they're much stronger in the sense that we did things purposely with them to, by Allah's grace, to give them a certain level of beginning. So it's definitely worthy to, if you can, to plan it and really talk about, you know, the process of, as we are intimate with each other, you know, what's the best practices for us in our relationship so that they don't come, you know, that fast if we're really going to plan it.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, it's very important, though, to set aside that time to be a couple. And the reason why I say that is because those of us who are, you know, who follow the protocol of courtship in the nation, even though there are many people outside of the nation that don't have access necessarily to the protocol of courtship, but they're certainly welcome to use it. You know, we really don't get to know a person until we live under the same roof with them. And as Sister Nisa was describing the story that Minister Farrakhan shared, you know, we kind of take off the mask after the honeymoon. So now here's the revelation of who we really are. We become comfortable and relaxed, and, you know, we've gotten the prize now, so I don't have to necessarily look my best every day, or, you know, I don't have to say all the right and sweet things anymore. You know, I already have you, so to speak, and we take one another for granted. And so there are a lot of things that may be revealed during that time. And so before you bring children into the equation, I think it's a good time to observe whether or not that's somewhere you want to stay. And I'm certainly not encouraging divorce, but there are some things that you might want to work out before you make the decision to reproduce someone into the future, or have a child coming to a marriage that is broken. And you're trying to, you know, sometimes they try to stay together for the children. Sometimes they just leave and say, hey, you know what, we might have a baby, but I'm not obligated to stay here. So I think couples need to take that time to be with one another, to allow that relationship to enhance itself, to really bond with one another before we start to bring children into the equation, because there's nothing worse than a broken home. We have so many broken homes in our society, and particularly, and it says that 70% of our first marriages end in divorce, and more than 40% of our second marriages end in divorce. And so in order to build a nation, we have to strengthen the family. So that's just some advice that I wanted to give. And also, Sister Nisa and Sister Celia, you know, I've heard so many different arguments. I mean, just everywhere, especially in our field. And what about the raising of the children? Because when the babies just come, you know, I don't know if this, you know, should be done beforehand or while you're pregnant, because, you know, you have 9 months. But what about the preparation of how the child is going to be raised? Because, believe it or not, a lot of couples still bump heads on that issue. So, Sister Nisa, what you think?
I think that's also one of the questions that needs to be asked during the courtship process. You know, are you a spanker or are you a time-outer? You know, how were you reared? You know, what kind of things did you do? Because, see, if you don't ask those questions until you're pregnant, then you're at a loss, because now you're married to somebody and you're like, oh, my God, you can't do that to my child. You know, you're like butting heads with parenting decisions. And so those are the kind of things that also need to be talked about during the courtship process, because you will find, you know, you scream and holler at children, you know, but you screamed and hollered at, I mean, because that's major. I mean, for a person who grew up in a quiet household and nobody screamed and hollered at them, and the parents, you know, they're not used to that, and then you marry somebody and they're a screamer and a holler, I mean, that's major. That is major and can cause a lot of unnecessary disruption and contention and all of that. So, you know, these are the kind of questions that really have to be asked in the courtship process as well. But when you find yourself in the thick of it, you really have to work on coming to a good understanding between both people. What is going to work for our family? What is our family going to do? How is our family going to handle these issues? So it's not just mommy's baby. It's not just daddy's baby. It is our baby. And how do we handle these situations?
Yes, ma'am. And Sister Cecilia, your view on this?
That it's the same thing. That they have to be discussed during, you know, during the courtship process, and not just discussed, but interview family members. See, you know, was he hit with that switch? Did mama have a hand with a slipper? I mean, you have to not just hear it from the people, but you got to get firsthand knowledge, you know, asking the mother or asking the daddy, well, did she get whooped? Was she rude? What kind of child was she? Because like the minister said, you're going to see yourself in your children. And so for me, I see myself in my children on all kind of different levels of my development as they grew up. So when you know that the way you were reared, the way you treat your children, the way you deal with your children, it has to be communication all the time with the husband and the wife. And sometimes you may have to tell the child, you know, we'll deal with you later on, and give mommy and daddy time to discuss, well, what's the best methodology in this situation? Because you never want to be in front of the children debating on what their punishment is or what should be done with this behavior or that behavior. So you always want to be communicating to your spouse from the courtship process to, like she said, in the thick of it. It's always continuous communication. And if you're a parent, it's always going to be communication, because them children are going to always be doing something.
Yes, ma'am. I remember so well. I'm just glad they all grown now. All places do a lot. And it doesn't get any better when they grow up. I tell you that right now. It doesn't stop. Trust and believe me. I got two 28-year-olds and one 32-year-old. And the mothering never ends. Take it from someone who knows. Okay,
yes,
and Sister Nisa, we so hate that you have to leave us so soon, but I want to get into this before you go right quick. You know, when we talk about family planning, and we talk about, you know, of course, adding an addition to the family, oftentimes what is missed or what is not prepared for is the financial changes, especially if the mother works, if the wife works, and, you know, she's going to have some downtime, you know, due to the birth of the child. And so how do we best deal with that situation? Because certainly that is stressful for the spouse.
For everybody. It's like I said, you know, a baby changes things. And from the finances to housing to where we're going to sleep, I mean, a baby changes things. And these are things that really need to be talked about during the 9 months before the baby comes. Is she going to be a stay-at-home mom? Is she going to go back to work after 3 months? Now we have to pay the cost of daycare. I mean, they're all these new expenses. And so I just encourage couples, start talking about these things as soon as you know the baby is coming, because a baby changes things.
Right, and also, you know, if you know when you're planning your family before you even get pregnant, you know, talk about what the goal is. If you want to stay at home a couple of years or whatever it is,
right,
then you need to plan for that ahead of time. Before you even get pregnant, you need to start putting money aside for that, just in case you so happen to get pregnant by surprise, so to speak. And, you know, at least you have a format or a plan, an idea of what direction you want to go in, because financial strain is murder on a marriage, I tell you.
You're absolutely
unfortunately,
right.
Unfortunately, but it is.
No, you're absolutely right. And let me just say this last 2 minutes. I just want to thank you for having me on your show. And whenever you need me to come back again, just let me know. I would love to come back again. And just for all your listeners, this is a wonderful show, so don't miss it at all, ever. Tune in every week. Thank you so much, sis.
Thank you,
Queen.
Too.
Thank you, Sister Nisa.
Yes,
assalamu alaikum to you, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum.
Okay, so Sister Cecilia, you know, what about the finances for the baby? You know, that planning.
I mean, that is essential to plan for the baby, but the reality for most of us is that we did not plan to have the baby. So
right.
We did not plan to save any money for the baby. You know,
right.
That's the reality. But once the child is here now, we have to be more cautious of how we spend, where we're spending our money. If you were used to saying, well, the husband had his own allowance after a while, after you paid the bills and all this, it was a certain amount of money of allowance for the husband, a certain allowance that the wife may have had, but now you have a new baby, so now those personal allowances may not be there as much as they used to be. So all of these are things that we have to look at. Where can we cut corners? Because when children come in now, it's not just taking care of them day to day. You also have to plan for their future. Are they going to go to college? Are they going to go to technical school? Do they want to travel abroad? I mean, these are things that we have to prepare for, and it's difficult, but we have to sacrifice in the beginning to have the best results at the end. And so for us, we especially have, like I said, for every dollar, try to save, you know, a quarter from a dollar. I mean, just try to save something to help our children. In the future. I remember someone was telling me a story about this man when his child was born. His son was born, and he wanted to send him to college. So he bought some land, and he grew timber. He grew these trees, and when his son became of age to go to college, he cut down all the trees, sold the timber, and was able to pay for his child to go to school for 4 years. You know, this was a parent that really, really was planning for their child's future. So we as a people have to do more planning and not just flying by the seat of our pants, because most of the time we're flying by the seat of our pants because of the, like I was, we were speaking earlier today about the perpetual survival mode that we seem to stay in. We're always in the survival mode. If we're living check to check, or if we're not living check to check, how are we spending the money that we get? I was getting gas the other day, and I said, well, I don't smoke cigarettes, you know, but I was just looking at the price of the cigarettes as I was waiting in line, and I was like, okay, a pack of cigarettes are $3.50, $5, and I'm like, now, if you don't smoke or you stop smoking, how much money can you save in a week just from not smoking?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, not to mention
how
many years you can add to your life.
That, too, add to your life, save your lungs, you know, but just those type of things. What habits can we stop and put that money away for the future?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. And, you know, as we're talking about money, and, of course, recently, as you know, there's what I call a preliminary governmental shutdown, because the government has yet to shut down. When it shuts down, it's going to be a different story. And so, the minister has been telling us, has been trying to prepare us for this very critical time. Of course, they're already talking about cutting the food stamp budget. They already have exhausted the funds and Social Security and pension and whatever else that you can have. And, you know, we really, really have to take the three-year economic plan very, very serious. It's very, very critical, more so than ever now. And so when we get married, Sister Cecilia, you know, we have to think about, you know, even though we're all in honeymoon stage and all of that, we have to think about getting older. We have to think about retirement. That is a reality. You know, even if we have goals that, hey, I want to retire, but by the time I'm 50 and we're 25 when we get married, we have to really think about that. But we can no longer depend on the government to house or store our retirement with Social Security and anything like that. So how soon should we start planning for our retirement as a couple when we get married?
I mean, if a couple getting married, how soon? As soon as possible. You know, the minute they start, the minute they, even in the courtship process, once two people decide that we're going to get married, okay, it's time now to sit down and really talk about those finances. How much money is coming into the household on both sides? Do we have investment property? How are we going to handle this? And I remember one of our sessions, we were dealing with finances at the marriage retreat. A brother and his wife gave an excellent thing. He said, this is what we do. He said, both of us work. We have one pot of money that we take, and that is exclusively to pay the bills of the household. He said, then she has her account for her, what she wants to spend money on her personal account. He has his personal account. And then they have an account set up for investment, which is totally separate from the other accounts. And I said to him, that is the best plan that I had ever heard of for me, was that they took the time from the beginning to say, look, this is our investment, this is your spending money, this is the bill money, this is his spending money. And that helps cut down on a lot of confusion when we can sit down and be honest with each other what's coming in, and there's no secret pots of money that the other spouse don't know about. Yes, this is my money over here. This is how much I have over here. And to have the discipline and the respect to say, well, that's his money or that's her money, you know, that's outside of taking care of the household bills. And again, it's our level of maturity in handling the finances. Now, for some of us who know we have a spouse who may be a spendthrift who just can't keep money for too long, and then they come to you borrowing some money because they done spent out their money, then now we have some tension in the house. Because one person is good at saving and the other person don't care nothing about saving. The money's going to go. I just had to buy this new pair of shoes. I just had to buy this new technology. And you're like, what happened to you? What happened to your money that you have? Well, I just spent it. I had $500. I just spent the whole thing on this piece of technology. So now it's stress in the house because this person who likes to spend, they're looking for more money to spend. You know, so we have to sit down and be honest and be truthful with each other. And sometimes we have to look at who's the best person to handle the finances. Because, again, we're looking for our household to run smoothly, to work as a team. So in order for things to flow well and without the stress and the strain of arguing about finances and this and that, let's be mature about it. Let's sit down and say, okay, baby, this is the amount of money we got coming in. This is the amount of bills we got coming in. This is how much the life insurance policy is. This is how much the barrier, you know, all of these are things that we have to think about, because if we don't plan for ourselves, guess what? Somebody else got a plan for your money already.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, speaking of good plans, you know, my brother and his wife, they got married, and I think they both made about, you know, I think it was like $60,000 a year that they made. And so they were both living in apartments when they met one another, and they lived in, my brother lived in a 3-bedroom townhouse or whatever, And so, you know, she actually, her bills decreased when she moved in with him. And so they just didn't spend anything extravagant. They lived off of one salary. She saved her salary for about 3 years. And, you know, the next thing I know, they bought their house. It was halfway paid for. You know, it's just a lot of things that you can do to really manage money well. And if you don't manage money well already, there's always classes, always financial counselors that can guide you in this process, because right now it's very, very critical that we save our money. Okay, Brother Kareem, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
Do you have Brother James' number? He called me, and I think all the lines are full, and he can't get in. Can you call him?
All right. I'm going to call him. Okay. I'll
get him on the line. Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Okay. And also, Cecilia, what about an emergency fund? Because, of course, those are things that we cannot foresee, but those are things that we definitely need to plan for, especially in the field of health care, because the one thing we never plan on, we never plan on getting sick, especially for those of us who are in good health. Most of the time, you know, we never think about having an accident where we might injure ourselves, or, you know, where we might, you know, just come down with a sickness, and oftentimes that catches us off guard. So what about the emergency fund, Sister Cecilia?
I mean, that definitely is a fund that you also have to be able to put something in, because, like you said, our health, how some people, their whole savings it disappears with just in health costs alone. Emergency situations come up. These health insurance policies now, a long time ago, you could get health insurance, and it used to cover 100% of your benefits. Now people say, well, I spend, it only covers 80%. This one only covers 70%. Well, where's the rest of it? Oh, it's coming straight out of our pocket. So it goes that my mind when you said that is we need to invest in emergencies, definitely, to put away money for emergencies, whether it's our health, whether it's a death in a family, whether it's a car breaking down, because Lord knows our cars are forever breaking down, and it's an unexpected repair where you're spending $1,500, $2,000. That can wipe out that could wipe out 3 or 4 months worth of savings. So, again, we just got to be cautious of how we spend our money and what is important to us, and to have that backup. And I love what you said. When we have a family that's a two-income family, we really need to look at it. Do we really need to spend everybody's check to the limit? Can we take some of that money and put it to the side and say, like you said, that was an excellent thing they did. They were very mature in how they handled it. The bills, the whatnot, came from the husband's check, and the wife's check was used to save. And I'm sure, of course, she had the money that she took out for her personal expenditures and things that she wanted. But you take that other money and be able to set it to the side as best we can. And the minister's telling us the most valuable thing that we can invest in is land.
Yes, ma'am.
So if the most valuable thing we can invest in is land, then we need to be looking at how can we pool our resources and get some land. Because from that land, he's telling us everything comes from the land. From your food to your clothes to everything. So for us who may be dragging our feet, who may not be listening, if you live somewhere, like you just said, they went and bought a house. And this is one of my pet peeves. And my husband be like, he just looks at me and laughs. I said, why? would you go and invest $350,000 into a home and you don't even have enough room to make a garden to grow some food? The houses that they build today are so close to each other, and they're in the $350,000, $500,000 houses. You can lift up your window and look out your window and see into your neighbor's house.
Oh, my God, sister, where you live?
We're in Atlanta, but some of the houses that they build, I mean, you go to some of these subdivisions, the houses are so close together, it's ridiculous.
Oh, no, y'all need to come to Texas. You got to throw a rock or something to get your neighbor.
This is some of the subdivisions, because I remember when we first moved, because we lived in Albany, Georgia for 10 years because my husband was a study group coordinator in Albany, Georgia. And we moved back to Atlanta in 2005. And I was reading the paper where they gave permission for real estate property owners now to be able to build houses much closer together so that they can fit more houses in the subdivision.
Oh, no, ma'am.
I mean, you can drive and the houses are gorgeous, but their neighbor is just that close to them. And I'm like, why would this is showing you the conditioning of our mind where people, like the minister said, people don't want to grow no food. They don't want to go on no farm. They ain't thinking of putting their hands in the dirt. They pay for someone to mow their lawn, and that's as far as it goes.
Oh, no, ma'am. Well, sister, when y'all get ready to come to Texas, let me know. We got plenty of room. You know, you might have to throw a rock or get a bullhorn to call your neighbor, but, no, we can't live like that. No, ma'am.
No, I say some positions now. I ain't say it was all of them like that, but it's a lot of them. Because I'm looking at property that you would have to throw a rock, you know, at your neighbor. Because I like space.
Yes, ma'am. Feeling you. Okay, I thought I heard someone call your name, call my name. Brother Kareem, did you say something?
Yes, ma'am. I said New Age Projects, but I also wanted to let you know that Student Minister James Muhammad is on.
Okay. Assalamu alaikum, sir. Is he not speaking to me tonight?
Maybe come off on mute, Brother James.
That's what I'm saying.
Walaikum salam.
How you doing, dear sister?
I am blessed by Allah's grace and permission, and you, dear brother?
I'm doing fine. Also by that same grace, and I hear our fiery sister giving some very, very logical advice and posing some very, very intelligent questions regarding the amount of money we spend on a house. And even though it represents, quote-unquote, real estate, yet the utility of it offsets the value of living in a nice home, especially in these days and times. So I'm in 100% agreement with my sister on that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, we are so thankful to have you join us. And I don't know if you were on when Sister Nisa was on, but, of course, she was a treat. But, of course, me and Sister Cecilia, we going to carry on. And Brother James, you feel comfortable to weigh in wherever you please, because we were talking about starting an emergency fund. But I want to get into health care, because we, unfortunately, Dr. Taffy Wagner, who is a premarital and postmarital financial consultant, could not be with us tonight. She had been ill, but she had taken severely ill, and so our prayers are with her and hope that she recovers very soon. But we want to wanted to talk about health care, because when we talk about marriages, you know, like I said, we plan for everything. We plan this big lavish wedding. We plan for this, you know, romantic honeymoon. And, you know, when we start, you know, adding up two incomes, we plan for the decor of the house and vacations. But when do we plan for health care? Not only that emergency, but the health care of potential sicknesses. And, you know, taking care of your health is number one, you know, but some people have sick illnesses, whether it's high blood pressure or whether you're diabetic or, you know, whether you have the trait of cancer in your family, lupus. I mean, there are a lot of things that that we can grow into, or a lot of things that can affect us as we move on in age. And now we're looking at the diminishing amount of insurance that is available to citizens in general. But even if you have benefits on your job, like Cecilia said earlier, they only cover so much, and then the rest comes out of pocket. So the first thing, of course, is to maintain your health to the best of your ability. Follow How to Eat to Live, of course. But, Sister Cecilia, when should we, or how do we best plan for maybe just long-term care? Because, you know, in America, we throw our people away. We put them in nursing homes, and I'm not going to even say the rest. You know what happens. That's a very devastating thing to have to do, but sometimes that is the only thing that we can resort to. So how do we plan to maintain our health?
Well, the first thing they need to do is go to www.finalcall.com and order the book, How to Eat to Live, because that is really our issue. Our biggest thing is that we don't want to obey what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been teaching us for all of these many years, which is the, our health, what we must do to be healthy. And it starts with what we put in our mouths. And Dr. Leem, we were privileged to have Dr. Leem in our city about 2 weeks ago, and he was just saying the best and only book that we should look for health is How to Eat to Live. It's putting the right food into our body. And when we know, like the minister's telling us on the time and what must be done, he's telling us that the foods that we think are good are poisonous to us. They're killing us with these chemicals. They're killing us with the immunization. They're killing us with the medicines that they're giving us. Anytime a doctor gives you a pill for one thing, and then you have to go back to him and get another pill for the side effects of the first pill, then you want a third pill, you want a third pill because of the side effects from the other two pills. So it's letting us know that the health system of America is not a health system. Dr. Ling said it best. He said it's not a health system of healing to help prevent it. They're just putting a Band-Aid over a situation to continuously get your money.
And so my brother says, it's not a health plan, it's a death plan.
It is a death plan, and once we get that through our brain that our doctors are that's why they call it practicing medicine. They are practicing on you. We are like their big rat. We're like the science project. And once we understand that we are their science project, then we have to go back to the earth that gives us the same good food without the chemicals, without the false processes, without the hormones, the pesticides. We have to obey what the minister's telling us. And like I mentioned earlier, we have to be put our ear to what he's going to instruct us to do in Tuskegee on October the 20th. When are we going to get it through our minds that we have divine guidance, but because we refuse to obey, We are reaping the problems from our rebelliousness.
Come on, sis.
Yes, ma'am.
So for those of us who don't want to obey How to Eat to Live, then, yes, you should put away money to the side to take care of our health. Brothers, you must go to the doctor every year and get your examination. You must get checked because a lot of things can be prevented without us having to wait to the last minute and we're being told by the doctor, well, you are in your last trimester of this disease or your last month of that disease. No, practice better health on yourselves. And the best thing that we can eat is what? Pure navy beans. The navy
right.
beans. What else should we be eating? Pure whole wheat bread. And of course, don't forget the power of raw milk. And I know and Dr. Lean was telling us, he said there are states or in the United States where raw milk is illegal for human consumption.
Hmm.
And why would they have raw milk illegal for human consumption? If you don't live near a farm, they say, then it's illegal to possess raw milk. And I'm sitting here listening to him, and I just so happen to have been studying raw milk by Allah's grace and permission since 2005. Raw milk is the most powerful thing that one of the most powerful foods that Allah gave to us in that cow, because in the cow's raw milk is what our cells need to make healthier cells faster when we have disease and illness. So if they know that, look, if I'm the doctor of death, why would I want you to have the very thing that would cause me to lose my job?
Right, because if you're not sick, they can't get paid.
Exactly. So it is a society of keeping you sick. I was talking to a doctor, and she said, why all of a sudden, she made me think about it. She said, why all of a sudden now black people have all these dialysis clinics in our neighborhood?
Hmm.
She said, all these dialysis clinics in our neighborhood, but you go to the white neighborhood and you don't see no dialysis clinics. And they drink more liquor than we do.
Yeah, well, it might not be the liquor. It might be what they're putting in the water in those communities.
Not just in the water, not just the liquor, but again, she was saying, and it made me to think, when I was pregnant with one of my children, I think it was, which one? My, he's now 1999, I was pregnant with him, and I was gestational diabetic. And at that time they said, well, if your sugars was like a 1.5 or something like that, you were considered okay. You were not gestational diabetes. But now, 4 years later, I have another child. I'm gestational diabetic again. The number goes even lower. So why are they lowering it? Every time they lower it, it means more people will fall into that category.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the same thing to me with the dialysis clinic. She said that the number is at a certain number that they have in the beginning. But when they see that they don't have enough patients in that area, they'll say, well, the research says we need to lower it we need to take it from maybe a 2.5 to maybe like a 1.0, and then we'll have more people diagnosed in that area. And I was listening to her. I said, oh, my God. I said, when you actually study, and there's a book out, I forget the name of the article. It's called Medicine, Medisin. Whitaker,
mm-hmm.
I think it's Dr. Whitaker from California.
Yeah,
and he's done a couple of presentations here in Atlanta. And the way he points out in that book what they are doing in the medical field, it would make you cry to see the wool that they put over our eyes, and we fall for it. Because we don't know, we don't want to think that this society is against us. This is a world that is against its people. It's not for its people. It's against its people, from the healthcare system to everything that they're doing. How can you be for the people? I tell people, I said, just think about this now. They have on the pack of cigarettes that this will cause you cancer. Mm-hmm. And you are selling it, you are permitting it to be sold to the people.
Yes, ma'am.
You're not pulling it off the or you're not saying, okay, we prohibit cigarettes from being sold in the United States of America because they cause cancer. No, they say we're putting it there and you have freedom of choice to pick whether you die from that cigarette or not.
Right, and then they make sure that they make the cigarettes more and more addictive so that it'd be more difficult for you to quit.
That's
because
right.
I've heard some people say that quitting smoking is harder than quitting crack. I was like, damn, for real?
Yep. Nicotine.
Wow.
Now they're talking about the electric cigarette. And I said to myself, I said, now, what they're putting in that electric cigarette that they're pushing
something
now?
Something that gives you pneumonia.
Cigarette.
Everybody that I know have tried it, they gotten pneumonia. They have all those vapors going into your lungs fill up with water. 3 months later, you got pneumonia and you don't know where it comes from. That's what they're giving you. And then, of course, the benefit is whatever else they can pump into you when you go into the hospital for the pneumonia. Not to mention the astronomical medical bill that you're going to receive from being sick. So it's all game. We got that.
Exactly. and we have to realize that we live in a society that their main concern is the mighty dollar. And once you realize that their main concern is the mighty dollar, they don't care about your health. They don't care about what they put on the food. They don't care about what they put in the water. So our best practice, we're going to go right back to it, is to follow what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad got from Master Farah Muhammad, which is how to eat to live, to eat one meal a day, to fast 3 days in the beginning of every month. Why? Because he foresaw the toxins. He foresaw the pesticides. He foresaw all of these things that are going on right now today with our health. So if we are obedient, we will save ourselves from a lot of health challenges that are occurring just by following how to eat to live. And Dr. Aleem said this. He said he loves to see the followers from in the beginning. He loves to see the pioneers from the first. He said because they are some of the most healthiest people that he examined.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, it's also very critical to Cecilia because, you know, a lot of the programs, a lot of things that we take advantage of now, they're no longer going to be available. You're not going to be able to go to the free clinic. You're not going to be able to go to, county hospitals where you get free health care. A lot of these programs are going to just subside, and it's going to be very critical that we take care of our health because we are going to have to go back to our medicine cabinets, of course, which is our kitchens, which we should never have deviated from. We're going to have to stop eating processed foods. We're going to have to go back to the land. We're going to have to learn how to plant and farm. And like the minister said, we're going to have to learn to love the land again because that is going to be the source of life. And if you don't mind, I'm going to take a minute and yield to Student Minister James to ask if he wanted to say anything. Brother James?
Yes, ma'am. I'd just like to punctuate, actually, and support what Sister Celia is saying. And all of it is absolutely the truth. The ultimate solution, which is really the only solution, is the Muslim program. I refer specifically to points number 4 as well as number 12 in what the Muslims want, and then point number 7 in what the Muslims believe. And, of course, point number 4 references the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's statement of separation. So we who have been the descendants of slaves should be allowed to establish a separate state or territory of our own, either on this continent or elsewhere. Separation is critical, and it's central to the answers to the problems that beset us. This bold exposure, in my humble opinion, of the enemy's attempt to destroy and depopulate the earth by 2 to 3 billion people, and to cull the population, particularly of black people, this is something for the benefit, of course, of us, to put us on notice, but not necessarily to change the government's behavior. They do not intend to change with all of what they are being exposed of. They have no intention to change whatsoever. We must remember that the scripture teaches us that this Satan wanted to equal himself up to God. And his mindset is, if I'm going to go, I'm going to take all or as many as I can with me. This is found in the Quran as well as the Bible. So his intention is not to, once he's confronted with the error of his ways, to change. No. So this bold exposure of what they're doing to us is for our benefit. And I'll conclude with these words. Yes, it is the benchmark, or hallmark, rather, of a civilized nation to care for its sick and elderly, to ensure that the people, whenever something unexpected occurs in their life's health, it is then the responsibility of the government to see to the protection of the health of the governed. However, health care is our responsibility. It is the individual's responsibility. We have the obligation to do the best that we can by ourselves. And we don't have any or too much, actually, we don't have any excuse. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been teaching health care for over 50 years. And, of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is reiterating those same teachings through, as Sister Cecilia said, or Celia, I hope I'm not, what, Sister, how do you pronounce your name so I won't make a mistake?
Cecilia.
And, of course, as she said, it's how to eat to live. And all of these diets and all of these peripheral and various and sundry books of guidance as to how best to eat, they all draw from How to Eat to Live, books 1 and 2. So that's our saving grace. That's our doctoring. That's our hospital. That's our medicine. And the government, we cannot look to the government to care for us. I was listening, and I was listening to the news, and with this shutdown, they were announcing the real possibility that veterans will lose their veteran benefits and their health care, while the Congress that is responsible for this shutdown, this inability to compromise with the president or with both sides of the aisle, they're still getting paid. That is not just wrong, that is obscenely wrong. For America, out of the Congress, as it is stated that Congress constitutionally is the body that declares war on behalf of that particular sovereign state, particularly America. It is Congress that declares war. Well, if Congress declares war, they, in effect and in reality, send those people out to fight, die, and bleed on behalf of this nation. Now, because of Congress and its recalcitrance to come sit at a table and agree one with the other for the benefit of the health of the nation, now the veterans whom they sent out to kiss, to die, to fight and die, are now going to lose their benefits? And they're still going to get paid? I mean, this should open up the eyes of any blind person. And I'm hoping that it does. This is a nation of devils. And even those who want to do good don't have the moral strength, the testicular fortitude, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan refers to it, to stand up against those who are devilish, so they become aides and minions of Satan. So it is our responsibility. Once knowledge comes, we have that obligation to live by that knowledge, to apply that knowledge in our lives. We're responsible for our own health care. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, again on October 20th, is going to reveal to us where we need to send our money. And I'm hoping that we've been, ever since Savior's Day 2013, been putting those nickels daily aside. So when he does make the announcement, there will be a flow of money just automatically coming to whatever institution he announces we should send our money to. We need land. Sister Cecilia, you're absolutely right. And not land to build a luxurious house, although there's nothing wrong with that, but a house that we can, I mean, land that we can farm on. We can go to the earth. Well, a word to the wise and even to the fool should be sufficient. So I'm loving this show. You are, all we can do from our position is to bear witness, to say amen, or all praises due to Allah, to what is being said by you, Sister Aziza and Sister Cecilia. So we say all praises due to Allah. Amen, hallelujah, and peace.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Duda Minister James. Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida. That's my big brother, my minister, my father, my friend. He's just, he wears so many titles. I just love him so much. So thank you.
Oh, I love you too, sis. All praises due to Allah.
Yes, sir. Okay, I'm going to check one more time. Brother Kareem, are there any questions? Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am. Here I am. I didn't want to cause a problem. Our brother Eugenio actually has asked several questions in the chat room. What I'm going to try to do is comprise them into a reasonable question here. The first thing is he asked the question. He said, is it possible that one of the reasons why it is so difficult to save money, develop money within a relationship, is because this society places so much pressure on both husband, wife, and children?
Hmm. Well, I'm going to let Sister Cecilia go first, and then I'll follow up.
I mean, it's evident. I mean, you live in a society where they pump living beyond your means. That's the way of America. America is dealing with debt right now because America is functioning beyond her means. So the only way they know to pump is to keep you in perpetual debt. I mean, why are we... You're listening to the rap music, you're watching TV, you look on magazines, and you see things that are way expensive. We're sitting here listening to rap songs where poor black men who were poor, and they've been pulled up to be able to rap, and you're sitting here rapping about Maybachs and Rolls Royces. What a kid in the ghetto know about a Maybach, Rolls Royces, and all these expensive cars that cost $300,000 and up. They don't know nothing about that. So now you're opening up a child's mind to something that's so expensive that they're looking at it like, shoot, I want to be rolling in one too. You hear stories. P. Diddy buys his 16-year-old son. a 300 or more plus car. I mean, this society pumps debt to us, but we have to be strong enough to say what the minister keeps telling us all the time. Live what the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad preached to us. Live within your means. If your means is a clunky Impala, then be happy with that clunky Impala. It's paid for. It's yours. You're not in debt. Be happy where you are. But this society keeps pumping Libby. I said to my husband, I said, why is it? I said, if you go to almost every elementary school, middle school, or any kind of school, and you look in the parking lot that says the principal will have either a Mercedes, a Lexus, a Volvo. So the society says, well, you know, once you get to a certain level bracket, this is the kind of car that you should drive. And I said to my husband, I said, now, I'm a car, I love cars, especially the fast cars. So I love looking at different cars, even the most expensive cars. I was just on the internet and saw one of the most expensive cars sold was like $54 million, something like that. But I was looking at the cars, and I said, all of a sudden now, I see more black people buying Audi cars. And I was like, now, this is quite interesting because most of the time you don't see us driving Audis too much. And so I just happened to be in the doctor's office or somewhere, and what did I find in one of the popular magazines that most black people pick up? What was the car that they were advertising in that magazine? They were advertising Audi. That is how this society is. Whatever they want black people to spend their money on, they'll put it in movies, they'll put it in magazines, they're going to put it on your favorite picture. You love watching these crazy reality shows. One of them going to be getting into an Audi. One of them are going to get into something that's way beyond your financial means, but because it's popular, you got to be down with what's popular. So we're going to live above our means. So we have to, again, be wise, be smart within ourselves and say, I can't afford that. I'm not getting that. I will save my money up until I'm able to afford it where I'm not in debt. Why are you sitting up here paying for your salary every 2 weeks, maybe $1,000, $1,500? And right now you're paying for your car note is $500 to $600. You add insurance on top of it. You're hitting almost $1,000+ a month just to afford a car that's out of your means. You can really only afford maybe a $200 car note, but because they say the most fashionable, popular car is this, we're living above our means so that we can be seen. And I said to my husband, I said, why are we spending money on crazy stuff and nobody see you getting out your car when you park it? When you park your car at work, who's really sitting there watching you? Wow, look at him get out of that Audi. Wow, look at him get out that Hummer. Who's really watching you? Who are you really following? Are you really following yourself, or are you following what society says? And people don't realize how programmed we are in this society. They programmed you. All they had to do was open up one Korean nail salon. That's all they had to do to get our appetite wet, open up one nail salon, and all we had to do was see four or five sisters getting their nails done. We love it. We like it. Now there's Korean nail salons all over the place, everywhere you go. I told my husband, I said, look at the plazas. When you go to a plaza that has a supermarket in that plaza, it's almost guaranteed there are going to be two things in that plaza. It's going to be a nail salon, and it's going to be a hair shop, a beauty supply store in the plaza. It's almost guaranteed because they have trained us to do certain things, and they bank on us doing it everywhere that we go. And so, yes, brother, for those of us who know that we're living above our means, in order for us to survive, that's what the minister's telling us. In order for us to survive, we have to really look at the expenses that we are spending. is it necessary? Do you really need 300 channels? We got to ask ourselves to be honest. Do we really need 300 channels? Do you really need 50 channels of sports? And then I was looking at we were somewhere, and the man was advertising this big TV. And he was saying, now with this big TV, you can watch 6 different sports channels at the same time. I said to my husband, I said, oh, my gosh. I said, wives who have husbands that are sports fanatics, I said she thought it was bad with him watching one channel of sports. When he see a TV that he can see 6 different sports channels, I said she might as well say goodbye to her husband because he's going to be gone.
Well, you know, I want to address Brother Eugenio's question. You know, we have to become adults, and we have to really start looking at our situations. And the first thing I tell people is cut the television off, because it has become the devil in the living room, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us. And this is how the devil is coming into the living room. We are spending money way outside of our means. You mean to tell me we will buy a Mercedes-Benz, we will buy a Jaguar, we will buy an Audi, like Sister Cecilia said, but we don't own a house on our block. We have generational people leasing houses in the community. And come to where I come from, you can count 3 generations of families that have lived and leased, rented in that community for 3 generations. We don't own anything. And the monies that we spend, what do we invest in? We invest in tennis shoes, cars, clothes, gold chains, nothing that is tangible, nothing that we can plant our feet on, you know, in the next 20 years. And the styles are changing. And don't even get me talking about technology. They come out with a new phone every day and making your old phone obsolete. So you have to get the new phone, keeping you spending money. When cell phones first came out, you can keep a cell phone for as long as it would last, as long as you didn't break it. But they are creating different ways to get your money, creating different things to get your attention so that your mind can be distracted from what is important. There are a lot of rich white people that are riding around in Volkswagens, little Hondas, Chevrolets, or whatever. They have plenty of money. They own their houses. You know, they don't have the brand new Jordan tennis shoe, but they own their house. Or they own their own business. You know, so we have to stop being a foolish people. And then I'm going to tell you brothers something. You know, all you brothers and I'm sisters, you know, y'all get mad at me. I'm telling y'all both. All of you sisters who love trinkets and all of you brothers who are trying to impress with trinkets, it's almost ludicrous. Because it's not going to build your relationship. It's not going to save your marriage in the end. Yes, the minister said that you have to have money, but the minister said that you have to be a producer. He didn't say that you have to buy her a yacht and a house with a 10-car garage and have every Mercedes and Jaguar and Benz parked in there. No, you need to be a producer. That is the type of man that all sisters should be looking for, a man with a vision, a man with a plan, and a man that is capable of being a producer. But if you're looking for trinkets, if you got a husband that's working on the job and he making $200,000 a year today, he might be unemployed tomorrow. So we got to have something tangible for ourselves. So we need to be careful about what we say we want and what we like and what we love and what we got to have. We got to get out of that. Spending money the way we spend money is just as much as an addiction as any drug.
Well,
because we have been conditioned to do so for so long. And we have to rise above that situation and elevate our thinking into the thinking of Allah and listen to the minister and hear him and go where he say go and stay from where he say stay from. We have to hear and obey. That is simple. And those who fail to hear and obey, those who think that this is so difficult, you have yet to experience the difficult times. Because when this government finally tells the American people that it is broke, when they finally reveal to you that the dollar is backed by nothing, when they tell you that, even though you know that already, but when they tell you that, and there are no more funds, and they've already taken $1 billion-plus out of the food stamp fund, and people don't have anything to eat, then you're going to see the reality. And all your Mercedes and all your Nike tennis shoes and Michael Jordan ain't coming to your house to help you. it's gonna really set it in. So it says do for self before you are forced to. And it's unfortunate, but it looks like that most of us are going to be forced to because we don't believe the reality of what is to come. So I thank you, Sister Cecilia, for sharing that with us. And thank you, Brother Eugenio, for your question. Okay, Brother Kareem, are there any other questions?
Just one more. Again, it's Brother Eugenio, and he asked this question. He says, wait a minute, let me get this right. Okay, so much pressure is placed on the man, woman, and children today. How can we reconnect with each other within a family?
Okay. Sister Cecilia, I'll let you take that on.
Well, how you reconnect with the family is to connect the family on one vision, one purpose. The family needs to sit down and to discuss the future plans of that family. Where do we see ourselves in 5 years? And like you said, because we know that we are in the fall of America, well, what's the plan? If you don't have a job, are you going to create a job for yourself? Is there a business that you want to open? Maybe you've been working as an accountant for years for other people. Well, maybe it's now time to start to open up your own accounting firm. Is your wife or you gifted in a talent that can turn into a economic base for your family? So to bring the family back, and see, that's why a lot of families are, so many cases here in Atlanta especially, I have heard in the news where a man lost his job one day, his wife lost her job the next day. They had 3 children. He killed his family and himself because he lost his job. His wife lost her job. We cannot allow ourselves to be that distraught over economics where we are killing each other. We have to remember, before there was these jobs, our parents knew how to go to the earth. We knew what to buy. And now that we got, quote, unquote, this education, we think that outside of this education, we can't survive. I was listening to the news, and this lady said she had 3 PhDs. And could not get a job. And the minister's telling us there will not be no jobs for you. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has been saying this for over 50, 60 years. The minister's telling us this right now. There will be no jobs for you. People who are being furloughed right now. Suppose there's no job to go to. What are you going to do with the skill and talent that Almighty God gave you? What are we taught? To pool our resources. Find like-minded people. If you're good at, say, making furniture, maybe you know 3 or 4 other people who love to make furniture. That's a furniture business. Maybe you're good at sewing clothes. Find 3 or 4 or 5 other people with like minds. We have to prepare ourselves for the fall of
America. We're looking at it. We're seeing it. We're hearing it. So, brother, the best thing to do for your family is to have them come together at your dining room table, which is our conference table, the minister said. That is where we teach and train our family. You bring everybody to the table, from the little baby all the way to the oldest child, and you talk and discuss the visions for your family so that everybody, if this is what my family does every day, my husband, he comes home, we eat dinner together, and we're talking, we're discussing what's the agenda for this week, what's the agenda for next week, what are the plans, what is it we got to accomplish. This is something that we all have to start to implement in our household so that there is chaos where there is no vision. So to eliminate the chaos, we have to be planning and setting goals, especially in a time of economic difficulty. Okay, where do we need to cut the budget? We have to cut the budget because now our household may have been used to $10,000 a month, but right now we're down to maybe $3,000, $2,500. Where can we cut it at? Where can we sacrifice that and begin to help our family to get up on our own feet and do something for ourselves? That's where we are now, where we have to plan to do something for ourselves because we're definitely suffering the consequences of our rebelliousness in not moving fast enough in the planning of doing something for ourselves.
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, I also wanted to add, Brother Eugenio, you know, when we talk about, you know, our families coming together, it's everything that Sister Cecilia said, of course. But, you know, I remember Student Minister Robert Muhammad was on the show, and he was taking an observation of his own family. And he mentioned that, you know, it's five people in the family at home, and he was saying that we can all be under the same roof and we're all doing different things because we are so addicted to our electronic gadgets. So you have one on the iPod, one on the iPad, and somebody was looking at TV, and somebody was playing on their phone, and they're all in the same household. And those things, you may not realize it, but we are addicted to gadgets, a lot of us. And so we need to put the gadgets down. We need to start coming back to the table. We need to start insisting on family time together, not letting your teenage daughter, you know, sit up on the phone or take her plate up to her room or however the thing is, you know, just to keep peace in the house. You have to structure your household as a working, productive family unit, and you have to bring your families back together. So many families don't have dinner together anymore. So many families no longer have family meetings. Don't nobody know what anybody's doing, where anybody's going, or anything like that. You got a mother maybe trying to juggle the schedule, or maybe a father trying to keep up with the boys and the mother trying to keep up with the girls. But this is nonsense. So we have to kind of cut the recreation out sometimes, and we have to do what is best for our families to strengthen and empower our families, because at the end of the day, that is all any of us are going to have is our families, and our survival is essential to our unity is essential to our survival. So we can have families in the household, but we are not a unit. Everybody's on a different page. So the first thing we have to do is cut all the gadgets off, call a family meeting, and set that structure in place. And most of all, you have to be consistent. You can't do it this week and not do it next week. You can't do it on Monday and not do it on Tuesday. You have to be consistent, because if we come together with an understanding and we start including everybody in the plan, then it really, really works as well as bonds the family together. So I pray, inshallah, that helps you or at least answers your question, Brother Eugenio. Okay. I want Sister Cecilia to take a moment. I know we're already over time, and just tell us about the upcoming marriage retreat. And if Brother James is still there, I want him to expound a little bit on what we can expect tomorrow, because we're having part two with Student Minister Abdul Akbar Muhammad, the international representative for the Honorable Ms. Lewis Farrakhan, on our live study group tomorrow. Put on the new man. So, Sister Cecilia, I got a sneak peek of information from your dear husband, Brother Marcus. He explained to me that the marriage retreat is going to be in Niagara Falls. Now, see, I'm not married, but I might just make this trip anyhow. So, tell us a little bit about what's going on with the marriage retreat in 2014, which is not too far away.
Yes, ma'am. We are in the midst of, we just put it all together. So by Allah's grace and permission, we're preparing for the 5th annual marriage retreat, which will be, inshallah, in Niagara Falls, New York, from September 10th through September the 15th of 2014. If you go to our website, www.blackmarriageretreat.org. You can see all of the great information. You can get the information you need to get started on the process of joining us next year for the 5th annual marriage retreat. And you also can see testimonials. You can also see videos of this year's retreat right on the website as well, to help encourage you to want to come and join us and just enjoy a lovely time of getting away from jobs, getting away from the children, just getting away from everything and being able to really get some tools and skills that we all can need, that we all need to help sharpen our relationships as husbands, as wives. And this year's theme is called Towards a More Perfect Union. A more just and perfect union in our marriages. So definitely please join us. And again, that website is www.blackmarriageretreat.org. And also check us out this Sunday as we have as guest Sister Nisa Islam and Brother Imam Sultan as we deal with manners and etiquette in our relationship.
Yes, ma'am. That's going to be a good show. And thank you, Sister Cecilia, for joining me tonight. I'm so honored to have you, Queen, and thank you so much. And so, you know, we're going to have you back again real soon. But we'll be working together, of course, in November. So I'm looking forward to that. And Brother James, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. I am, by Allah's grace. And, yes, you're absolutely right. We are anticipating hosting our beloved student international representative of the Honorable Minister Lewis Farrakhan, Minister Akbar Muhammad, for part two of our particular interview. He did, from what I understand, although I hadn't got the tape, the theme or the subject matter that he dealt with on Saturday, last Saturday in Jacksonville, he spoke at a masjid there, was the Muslim world at war with itself and the impact it has on Muslims in America. And he's going to be dealing with that, not this Saturday. He's speaking in Fort Pierce on Saturday. So he's going to be dealing with another subject, dealing with the attack on black people and the death of James Anderson. But Sunday he's going to do part two here in Tampa of that lecture, The Muslim World at War with Itself and Its Effect on Black or Impact on on Muslims in America. So we're looking forward to that, and that's what we're going to be talking about, the disunity of the Islamic world, or even better put, more positively put, the need for unity in the Islamic world. And, of course, we're going to talk about just a myriad of subjects, you know, various subjects dealing with the black community, but from an international perspective.
Yes.
So we're looking forward to that tomorrow. And then Saturday and Sunday, in fact, it's going to be a power-packed weekend with our beloved brother Akbar Muhammad. So we're looking forward to that, everyone. Please tune in.
Yes, and we will be hosting a broadcast for Minister Akbar as he's going to be speaking live. I think he's going to be in Tampa, right, on
Sunday? At the on Sunday at 11 o'clock at the Embassy Suites Hotel, same place we hosted Brother Dimitri. We anticipate a wonderful crowd and audience, and we're thankful to you, dear sister, for giving us access to the Blog Talk Radio audience.
Yes, sir.
It's going to be going to be very, very informative.
Yes, we had a wonderful turnout with Student Minister Dimitri, and I know it will be repeated again. So we are looking forward to hosting that broadcast right here on Sunday afternoon, because I think it's going to be noontime central. So definitely you will see the advertisement go out, and you'll be able to tune in as he is speaking live from Tampa. Okay, so Brother Kareem, is that it?
Yes, ma'am, that's it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank my listening audience. I know my Yahoo and Google people are mad at me, but I'm so sorry. My computer is on the blink, and inshallah, I'll be back with you all sometime this weekend or next week. So they don't like to listen on the phone because they say that they miss a lot of the show because the show cuts off on the internet, and I'm so sorry about that. But I will be back with you, inshallah, next week. So I want to give you the rest of the lineup tomorrow. Excuse me, at 8 p.m. Central. Of course, we'll be here with Student Minister James Muhammad and our international representative, Brother Minister Abdul Akbar Muhammad, at 8 p.m. on our live study group, Put on the New Man. On Saturday, we'll be right back here with Brother Ronnie X and Sister Yatira Muhammad out of the Tampa study group with Young, Gifted, and Black at 8. And on Sunday, of course, at 12 noon, you'll be able to hear Student Minister Akbar Muhammad as he does the live broadcast from Tampa. And Monday, we're going to be here with our engineer and our vice president, Brother Kareem Muhammad. And Brother Kareem Muhammad, are you going to give them the topic?
Yes, ma'am.
You'll give us a sneak peek?
Yes, ma'am. The topic for this Monday, all praises due to Allah, is where two or more are gathered in my name.
Uh-oh. Yes, sir. And there I am also. Yes, sir. Okay. And Tuesday, Brother Jahad Muhammad out of Atlanta, Georgia, will be back with the Fruit of Islam out on the front line. And on Wednesday, join us with 7 p.m. for DJ Black Caesar and Friends. And on Thursday, of course, I'll be back next week at 8 p.m. Central. And the topic will be Sunni, Shiite, Orthodox Nation. What is the difference? So I'm going to be joined by a panel of different Muslims, and we're going to sit down and we're going to have an Islamic unity celebration. That's what we're going to do.
Go ahead, sister.
So please join us and thank all of you for listening and all of you who helped me promote it on Facebook because my computer was broken. Love to you all. Special love out to my sister in Baton Rouge, Sister Latoya X Saunders. Love you much, Queen. I know she's listening. Thank you all so much, Sister Judy. Thank you, Brother Jahad. Thank you, Brother Kareem. I can't thank you enough. May Allah continue to bless us all as we leave you before we came before you in our nation and greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.